Welcome to Overflow, an Osage Hills podcast, where we explore the parts of Sunday's sermon that didn't make it to the platform, dive into upcoming events, and unpack why we do what we do as a church. This week, Nate, Mark, and Adam dive into the image of God. They talk about the different ways people have tried to understand this concept, how we can and should utilize all of them, and so much more. Stick around as we explore these truths and how they apply to our everyday lives. Here we go.
Good morning or afternoon or evening.
Good day.
Yes.
Good day.
Good day to you all.
Oh, ma'am.
Oh, madam.
Whatever day it is, damsel. Whatever time of day it is, hello.
Can they still be a damsel if they're not in distress?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I just think damsels often find themselves in distress. In
distressful situations.
I mean, in Disney. In the real world, I don't think so. But in Disney, certainly.
Well, it is a day.
It is certainly.
And it's have
the
a
day
good
the
one.
Lord has made.
Yep. So welcome to the Overflow podcast, where we are flowing over right now.
That is accurate. Don't know. Okay.
So we're, my name's Nate. I'm the lead pastor at Osage Hills, and I have Mark, our worship and associate pastor, or associate and worship pastor.
Yeah, one of those.
And Adam, who is our next gen pastor.
Hello.
And we'll be talking about the things that it wasn't, man, this past Sunday I was just slashing the sermon up right and left to get through the content. So there's a lot of things that we can go over, but essentially these are the things that didn't make it to the message. And that's okay. So we'll do a little bit more of a deep dive in what we discussed Sunday, which was the topic of the image of God. So, but before we get into that, let's, for our church people, and if you're not a part of our church, I would highly recommend that you do this anyway. Every church has something called Starting Point, or a way to get connected, or a lot of churches do. I can't say
right.
Every, but there are many churches who are desiring to help people get on a pathway to connection and activate them on mission to live for Jesus. And that's what Starting Point is designed to do. And so we'll be doing that this coming Sunday. If you're part of the church, we encourage you to log into the Church Center app and register for that. And that's April 6th. So lunch is provided. Kids.
Child care.
Also provided. It's great. And so the other thing that's coming up is, Resurrection Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a big deal.
Big deal.
So. Not even kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. It is.
Like it is a big deal.
Biggest Sunday.
The biggest of deals.
You may even say it is the center point and the highest pinnacle point of our faith.
Yeah.
Sunday. You may say that.
Might.
You should.
I'd say it's, if it didn't happen, we're a bunch of messed up people.
Well, we are anyway, but if it didn't happen, we're really sad.
Yeah. That's a better way of putting
yeah.
it. But it's a big weekend for us, and we've got some special things planned for the weekend. One thing in particular called the Extravaganza. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the Extravaganza. My first time to be here for the Extravaganza. It's really at its heart. It's a community event. It's an opportunity for us here at Osage Hills, our friends over at the Hub, and a couple other churches here in kind of the Northwest Tulsa area to get together and invite our community. We'll have a cookout, hot dogs and snacks and chips and all that fun stuff. We'll have, obviously we're going to do an Easter egg hunt for the kiddos. And so we'll have kind of staggered times for that. So, you know, there's not a bunch of rowdy 13-year-old boys elbowing small children around. Mm-hmm. But then we'll have a lesson. I'll have a lesson for kids and families, just kind of presenting the gospel and the Easter story. The cool thing about this is it's open to the community, meaning it's a great opportunity for maybe those of us who have never attended church, or maybe we're weary, maybe because we have attended church and we've had a bad experience. And it's a really great opportunity to just come and enjoy, you know, relationships, enjoy a community event. And also, you know, we're going to present the gospel. We're going to talk about the joy that we find in Easter. And so it is, it's the 19th. We're going to start it
the day before.
Yeah, the day before, Saturday, April 19th. We're going to start at noon. We'll have, like I said, food, face paint, what's it called?
Bounce house.
I was going to say bouncy castle. Same thing.
Eggs.
And eggs. 6,000 of
prizes.
Them.
Lots of different
all kinds of fun stuff.
Those things. So, but we do this kind of thing to make it so that we have an open door to reaching the community. We want to invite them to participate with us so that it's essentially an entry point for them to hear the gospel message.
Right.
And if you're a part of OSH Hills, and if you have kids, obviously, yeah, bring them so they can participate. But even if you don't have kids, come and participate. Loving on people,
yeah,
and right. showing up and talking to them and being friendly and inviting them to come to service the next day.
That's a great point, Mark, because I think a lot of people, and you wouldn't even necessarily be wrong to you think, oh, well, there's an Easter egg hunt. I don't have kids. There's nothing for me there. Right. That's not true at all. I mean, it's a great opportunity because it's going to be an entry point for a lot of people. I mean, we know for a fact, and we saw it last year. We'll see it again this year. We know for a fact that there are people who don't attend church, who don't know Jesus. They're going to be here in our parking lot. Mm-hmm. And so if you call OSH Hills your home, then there's something for you to do here. Get here.
Yeah.
We're going to serve and we're going to love on the people right around us in our community.
And people tend to come the next day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if you're part of another church and you're listening to this, I want you to come and invite them to your church.
Yeah.
You know, this is an opportunity for people to have their life changed by the power of God. So we need to jump at these opportunities as his followers. Well, and also as people who are made in his image to do the image of God thing means to, you know, make those connections and build the community and help move people toward Christ. So great opportunity for us. Really looking forward to it. And then the following day is Resurrection Sunday. So big day.
Big day.
Fun day.
The biggest.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
So anyway, invite people. Great. You know, people want to come. They want to come. They're waiting for you. So we have invitations here that you can take with you. You can personalize it. You can write their name on it.
There's room at Extravaganza for you.
Okay.
There's room at Extravaganza for you. That's a little sacrilegious, I think.
It might be. And I'm not going to join you because I can't find pitch. Yeah, so
there's room at the cross for you.
Yep. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Well, there's room at Extravaganza for you too.
Okay. So we were going to talk about this week's message, right?
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
What a segue.
Hey, there we go.
Hey, and now we have changed topics.
Just chapter intro.
I just thought it was needed. We still haven't started it.
We just launched a new series called Truly Human. And one of the things that we addressed this past Sunday, which I'd recommend you go back and listen to it if you can. Just log on to YouTube and find our channel, OSH Hills Christian Church. It'll be the first video on there because it's most recent. But this is about being people as a person, essentially, a human being. What is it that you were designed to do and to be in the world? And as a believer, we believe that God has created you for purpose, on purpose, for good reasons. And it's to create or basically bring more good into the world. So we cover a lot in there, and it's going to be difficult to really summarize here on the podcast. But
I think I can.
You can. Go for it. Go for it.
You, listener, dear listener. You were created by the creator of all things in his image, and he wants you to do image things.
Yeah, he does. That's a good way of putting it, yeah. And one of the things—
you don't have to listen to the sermon.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. Go back.
You should listen
to it. There's a lot more in there, but—
Beautiful.
You're not wrong, beautiful. Mark.
Well, I guess we need to stress something here, is that in creation, if the pinnacle of God's creation is mankind. They are listed on page one as the crowning moment of creation, the end. This is what everything was climaxing toward, was toward the human being. And so he created and set up an environment in which they can thrive and flourish and then develop more good things in abundance in this creation. And so in Genesis 1:26, it says, let us make man in our image. And after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And then there's this little poem. It says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God said, he blessed them and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And that's where I'm going to end. So being made in the image of God is not an old conversation. I mean, it's not a new conversation. It's in fact a rather old one. This has been going on for a very, very long time. And it is a doctrine of the church. If there are churches out there, any church that does not believe that you are made in the image of God, it's probably not a church of God. Right. And so, but doctrine is kind of a churchy word too. We don't need to be afraid of the word doctrine. It simply means a guiding belief of the church. So if you've been wondering what is a doctrine today, now you know it's a guiding belief of the church. And I'm talking specifically about the Big C church.
Right.
Not the little ones that are around here. This is something that I believe every church that is following Jesus, we do not waver on this.
Yeah, just for that clarity, you know, it is the little churches around here, and it's the big churches around here. It's the capital C mm-hmm. church, body of Christ, all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they believe something else, that's a red flag. You should probably not go there.
Yeah.
Or go there and transform their thought. But I want to explore this just a little bit. So we're going to kind of jump ahead to the finished product of this doctrine because it's been developing over the years. We're going to allow Scripture to kind of guide our understanding. So if you have your Bible open, just go ahead and turn to Genesis 1. It should be very easy to get to. It's at the front end of the Bible. But this belief has been called the doctrine of the Imago Dei. It's a Latin phrase that means image of God. So if you hear the phrase, you can think Imago Dei and realize that there's a lot of conversation around this. It's been going down through, a millennia, you know. Theologians, they acknowledge three general ways of viewing the nature of the image. And this is probably going to be a little bit oversimplistic. But I do my best to kind of summarize these views. So this first view is the substantive view. Some consider the image to consist of certain characteristics within the very nature of the human, either psychological or psychological spiritual. This view we call the substantive view of the image. Okay, that's what it's called. There's also the physicality side of this, the aspect of being physically made to look like God. So it is not just in how we psychologically perceive and make decisions, but also that we appear in form, in a very similar form to God himself, which is interesting. The psychological spiritual says something like this. It does not simply refer to appearances, but also includes the ability to rationalize. Humanity is a race that has the capacity to reason in multiple ways for multiple purposes, even morally. So, which kind of makes sense, you know? And you think if there is going to be a moral definition, the ones who understand that what a command does, or actually the essence of a command itself, will be capable of deciding for themselves whether or not they will follow said command, right? So, and then we attach value to the command, not as a personal benefit per se, but it can have that, but we attach something even deeper, the value of right or wrong. Mm. So it's not just the ability to rationalize. We rationalize a moral value to things. So, and I'm sure you've had conversations about this with other people. Well, maybe not to this extent in particular, sure. But you know, if you have kids, you've talked with them about, hey, that was not right. What you did there was not right. Mm-hmm. That was wrong. And then our ability to rationalize will contemplate how is it that we can make sure that they understand that this is wrong and give them some moral fortitude so that they choose to do what's right next time. And so this is, I mean, it makes sense. I kind of have, there are some weaknesses with this view in particular. And we're going to kind of cover this a little bit next weekend, but let's put it this way. God made human beings in his image, and they only knew good, and that one thing was wrong before they did what was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so there's the element of choice that was expanded upon discovering what was bad. And then now they have a lot more to choose. It's like, do I want to experience the bad and do the bad thing? Or do I want to experience good and do the good thing? But then we have through our choice, through Adam and Eve's choice, choose for ourselves and define for ourselves what that means. So there's definitely an element of this that's true. It's not, I don't feel like it's conclusively that. There's a lot of it that makes sense, though. There's the second argument, which is the relational view. Hopefully I'm not boring you or anything. I find this stuff very fascinating, especially when you get down into it a little bit. But the relational view is others regard the image not as something inherently or intrinsically present in humans, but as experiencing of a relationship between the human and God, or between two or more humans. And if you're looking at the text, I mean, that makes sense. Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and then let them rule. But it says he was not made alone. They were made for community. So to be made in the image means that you will be in relationship. In other words, we cannot be the image of God by ourselves. There's an aspect of coexisting in relational unity. So they lean more heavily toward that and say that right there is what makes you an image. So what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, words.
It's a lot of words.
No, I think I agree with, I think you may have said this before we started recording, so apologies. But essentially, yeah, I think there's elements of each one of those that have truth behind them.
Right.
And then there's elements of each one that just feel partial to itself and they want to make it make sense, but it struggles to. And I think anytime you're discussing God, it's generally never black and white.
Right.
I mean, he is the creator and sustainer of all things, and we just can't understand everything.
Right.
And we're not supposed to.
Right.
And so anytime that you get into really big, deep theological conversations and discussions and topics, mm-hmm. I think it's always a good practice to remember that you don't have to understand all this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you hit on something very, very fascinating to me. If we are made in the image of God, that means what the image is going to be more complex than simply thinking that it is the ability to rationalize or mm-hmm. being in relationship. Mm-hmm. It must be both.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It must be. So making a hard and fast line between the two seems like it does a disservice to the image and also does a disservice to the Creator God,
right.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Go is an attempt to make him understandable.
Yeah. Any God that fits into my box of understanding is not fit to be God.
Right. Well, and it goes to show that there's an ancient Near Eastern mindset between this two that the biblical authors are actually speaking to here, is that there's the relational aspect that just would blow every other culture away, is they think this God wanted to make humans so that they could image and reflect him. And most other cultures made their origin stories of how gods made humans. It was so that they could service the gods because they didn't want to work for their food. And you're like, that's what a human is made for. Yeah.
Wildly problematic yes. in so many ways.
Well, like it's just like, man, he doesn't really sound above you. He sounds like an oppressor.
Yeah. Why does he need food?
So he's the God. Yeah. I'm like, what kind of God is this? And then,
but if you're going to imagine a God, you can do a little better than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Even back then.
Well, and I think it speaks to the attempt to.
I mean, come on.
I think it speaks to the attempt to make him understandable, make right. a God yeah. understandable to you. What is the essence to be human? I mean, if you look at it in light of the curse, to not work hard. And that's probably, you know, the American dream gets there too. You're looking at, hey, what does I want to do when I get old? I don't want to have to work. I want to retire. That is an American dream, to not have to work and retire and make money doing nothing.
Passive income.
Yeah. And so, so if you mold and manage and shape a God into that, that's not the God of the Bible. So, anyway, kind of back to it. These are the views, substantive and relational. And then there's a third one called the functional view. Some consider the image of God to be not something a human is or experiences, but something a human does. So if we were to look at the text there, it says, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let them rule. So the definition of what it means to be human is found in their commission to rule. It's the functional view. The operation of the human is to fulfill God's mandate to rule and have dominion over his creation. So, but there is a part of this view that says the image of God is to image his lordship. So that is the functional view. This has really grown a lot of steam here recently as a view that a lot of people hold. I think personally that you cannot get to the functional view as the only way to hold it either. So again, deciding that this is the way to see it. And here's the reason why. In Genesis chapter 9, post-flood, okay, Noah comes off the ark. Actually, I'm going to pull it up and I'm going to read it to you. Noah comes off the ark. And all the animals with him. God sets his rainbow in the sky. And this is what he says.
Everybody failed the swim test.
Yeah, everyone failed the swim test. I like that, yeah. This is what he says. Whoever sheds the blood of man, this is 9:6, Genesis 9:6. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image. There is nothing that speaks to the moral compass of the person who sheds blood. It's not whether or not they're functioning well or functioning poorly. It's simply because he was made in his image. So there is something, there is intrinsic value to every human being that is beyond their function. It's kind of like that illustration that I gave about I operate as a husband and a father, but it's not how I operate that makes me a husband or a father. It's because I'm a husband or a father that I operate as a husband and a father. The same kind of thing here applies. It's because I'm a human being, I'm supposed to operate in the way that God intended me and designed me to operate. And if I'm not operating in that way, then I'm not functioning well as someone who has been made in his image. And so I think all three really are correct. I do not think that they're, you know, I don't think they can stand by themselves, you know. And these are conversations I'd love to hear more. If people view it differently, hey, email me questions@osagehills.com. it is just, it's your, you know, anyway, does that make sense? I hope that makes sense. So the thing is that, if we're looking at the scripture and we're seeing this, I have this quote from the Bible Project. I really like this. I think they put it together real well. God makes humans, and in Hebrew, the language is Adam.
So Adam.
Adam. Yeah. Sounds very similar.
Adam.
Yeah. Sounds very similar to a name of a character here in this book.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. And even the guy at the table. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't overlooking you there.
That's fine.
But Adam in Hebrew is a human being. It's in his image, and it's a concept that has to do with his role in God's world.
Yeah, can we? Because I think a lot of people just skip over this when they think about or read about Adam and Eve. Adam wasn't his name.
Right.
We've attached it to him, but Adam was human.
Human, right.
Like, and so I think a lot of people get tripped up because, you know, and this is maybe another podcast, but, you know, reading the Bible, especially creation narrative, early Bible, literal, or is it?
Yeah, literal, yeah, or figurative. Yeah,
right? So that'd be a fascinating podcast maybe do one day. But
sure.
I think it's helpful when we're talking about being created in the image of God that we separate that it was at the same time a man, but he was also the image in the Hebrew Bible of humanity.
Right.
Right.
So there's a lot more symbolism behind the names that we read in scripture that we just don't get because we transliterate them into English.
Right.
And so if we look at it in the Hebrew, there is a definitely meaning behind those things, a definition behind those things. So, and what's fascinating is if you have tools that are available to you, like Blue Letter Bible or BibleHub.com or something like that, you can find the meaning of these words. Like later on in Genesis chapter 3, Adam names his wife Eve because she would be the mother of all living. And so, and Eve means life giver, or life itself. And so here you have a story. By the time you get to the conclusion of Adam and Eve, you have a story of human life. And so there's a lot more that happens in this. And then it kind of puts into perspective that, man, if this is the story of human life, there's an awful lot that has to do with me in this, in these pages, in pages 1, 2, and 3. And it's a lot deeper than we think it is. So I think, you know, as much as, you know, maybe this stuff is not that fascinating to you, to me, when you look at these different views and you see where people are coming from, it's good to assess them and realize that you cannot land on one solitary view.
Right.
It does a disservice to, I think, the context. It does a disservice to your purpose, what God has made you for, and it does. I think it separates things and tries to make things too understandable, which then doesn't keep you in awe of our God, who's complex, and or even appreciate the diversity among human beings themselves, because there's not someone that you meet that looks like you,
right?
And a lot of people don't think exactly like you, but something that we long for is a relationship with people of like mind. But God's looking for our cooperation with each other, our unity with each other in taking care of, well, essentially being good stewards of what he's put us in. So then there's a lot to be said to that. As we continue on in the series, we're going to explore next that we've made a terrible error, and I think it's from the error that humans have made that we get our phrase "to err is to be human." But I don't think God thinks that way toward us. And so the entire biblical story is a narrative that leads toward restoration through faith in Jesus. So he doesn't think that we were made to make mistakes. It's that we've chosen to.
All right.
So I'm looking forward to it. And I hope this has been illuminating to you in some of these ways. There's an awful lot more that I had to cut from the message, but this is one of those items that didn't make it, that I think also kind of lays a foundation for why it's important to discuss, so that we know, hey, this is why God made me. This is why God made you. And this is your purpose in the world. And how is it that we can move in that direction so that we can experience all that God has to offer? So the abundance, you know, the blessing. Yeah. So any closing thoughts?
Nope.
No, sir. You got it.
Covered it.
covered it.
Home run.
All right.
Great.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, we don't know how to end now.
Yeah.
Bye. Blessings.